Welcome to Fuel, a NAVSE podcast for propelling your leadership journey. Fuel brings you into the stories that shape leaders' careers and their lives.
I think back to other things that influenced my leadership style. I think back a lot to 9/11. But when the building shook and you saw flames, you never in a million years dreamt a plane hit it.
In this episode, we hear from senior executive Miss Jamie Reese, who will share how our business is personal. And if you take care of the people, they take care of the mission.
I always thank the folks for being here because, as we were talking about just a minute ago, you're incredibly busy. And this has been an incredibly tasking but wonderful
week. Yeah.
For you. So thank you for taking the time to do this. Can you tell us your name, kind of a little bit about your position within Naval Sea Systems?
Yeah. So Jamie Reese, I currently serving as the Deputy Commander, Total Force and Corporate Operations for NAVC.
That's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful. It's a big title. My previous job had an even bigger mouthful, right? I've had a great career. I've been about 28 years in the Department of Navy as a civilian.
Okay.
I started as a financial management trainee right out of college. And I've always kind of done a lot of work on the acquisition side. And so I've navigated from financial management into like the program side. And then that kind of naturally spawned into like resource management. And so I kind of a non-traditional career, which I think is interesting, right? I didn't just stick with the 500 series and end up as a comptroller. I've moved around a lot, which I think is great because that diversity really comes in handy. That being able to up and out relate to the down and in is really, I think, a key part of what I do as the deputy commander. So in this space, I oversee the HR community. I would always tell you I'm not a 201. But I have amazing
HR professional specialist,
yes,
a true
HR professionalist, right? I slept at the Holiday Inn Express last night and know enough on human capital stuff, but I've got a lot of great true human resources professionals that I work alongside with, oversee facilities and strategy and manpower. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be overseeing a lot more for the enterprise security protocol and some other kind of key functions. And so it's an exciting and dynamic job. It's always growing. Vice Admiral Downey, front and center for C-10, which is my code, NAV C-10.
Right. Thank you.
To be leading one of the lines of effort, strengthen the Navy team, right? Get them in, get them working. Develop careers, right? And so that's everything we do here for the enterprise. And it's exciting because I think historically this job has been very headquarter PEO focused. And I've really, meaning like just the headquarters element kind of here at the Navy Yard. But I think in the future, or I know in the future, a lot more touch points across the entire enterprise, which is exciting. Because this business is also personal, right? This is a very personal business. And those stories, even if it's a one-off story, matter. And so we have to always look at those and self-reflect on, is that a story that's a one-off, or is that a story I need to learn from and act on?
As we were talking when you first came in, just like so much going on and having to shift your mindset, there is no such thing as multitasking. There's quick shifting, and you got to shift a lot.
I love that you just used that phrase, quick shifting. That is exactly right. I can be going from A to B to like a not even a letter, right? To a fruit in a drawer it's just all over the map. And so quick shifting is exactly right. But I think that's also what makes my job really exciting, right? There's no day that's even close to being the same. And that's great. And I get to interact with everybody on my staff in different ways all the time. Certainly some more than others, but it's fantastic to be able to get to understand how all these things tie together, right? And I think that's through, when I started talking about my kind of career being a little bit
back and forth.
Back and forth. I was like, what was that hand motion?
Back and forth.
Back
all
and
over.
Forth.
For those of you that weren't seeing me.
Yeah. But when I go back and look at my career and all the different places I've worked inside the Navy, as well as a little bit of time on the OSD staff, started my senior executive career with the Marine Corps, right? I've seen a lot of different things and had to always cover down on a lot of different things. And so I tend to want positions that challenge me with a lot of different things. That's definitely something I enjoy. I think I'd get a little bit bored with just one thing all the time. I mean, and quite honestly, I spent a lot of my career doing financial management and working in the departments, planning, programming, budgeting system. And I'll be honest with you, I was kind of like, I need a break from some of that, right? When I've done something for, 20 some years, that doesn't excite me. And so this job is exciting because it gets to touch so many different things. And certainly this job, to me, is the most important job at NAFC. Because if you take care of the people, they take care of the mission. And so I think it's one of the most exciting jobs in this entire enterprise.
As I hear you describing your job and what you do, it seems like it's kind of a natural fit because of who you are. I'm also wondering, how does that impact how you think about leadership and then maybe some of your own choices as a leader?
No, it's a great question. Because I think, when I did the Bridging the Gap training program, that's like the only formal training I had.
You went through that program.
I went through that program. It was a Department of Navy program. It's a great program. I went through that program. That was kind of the first time I'd ever gotten any type of formal leadership training. And I was probably almost 20 years in. One of the things they kept talking about was that once you become an SES, you should be able to do any job in the Navy. And I kind of would always crack up. I'm like, probably not the nanotechnology lead at NRL, right? There's some at the research lab, right? There's some really high-tech executive positions out there. But, 90% of the senior executive roles, the expectation is that you can fill it no matter your background. And so I really took that to heart and really thought about, could I do that, right? Did I have the right skill set to be able to do that? So whenever I approach, kind of my leadership style, a lot of the things that how I lead is agnostic to the career field because I'm leading so many different career fields, right? I can't just focus on resourcing or I can't just focus on the compliance with HR policies, right? I bring a different lens to how I lead because it really has to be agnostic to, the traditional career field, right? I can't just be an advocate for this community because I'm an advocate for all communities, right? And so, and I think that diversity of career and those diverse perspectives that I've gotten through a lot of interesting assignments really does shape how I lead because I really have to make sure that I'm thinking of all the stakeholders. I tend to kind of be very less quick reaction and more thoughtful. I try to be a little bit more of a thoughtful leader as opposed to just a fly, trust the first instinct, just go there. I tend to think through it a little bit more and really challenge my team to think through things. Well, how would so-and-so feel about this? Did you talk to so-and-so about that? What is this stakeholder going to say about this? I think that's an important way to lead because it not only builds trust with your team, but it develops a broader perspective. And I feel like I really do bring that broad perspective. When I first started here at NAFC, we were in a meeting and there was something that had come. And I was in a meeting with probably about 20 other executives. And they said, there was a question like, oh, we're going to have to do this. And oh, if that's the tasker, we're going to have to do this. And I watched this group, great minds, like engineering an answer to a question. And, I kind of just gingerly raised my hand. I'm like, well, where's the question coming from? Who asked it? And I was like, you don't need to do any of that. They're asking you for ROM, a rough order of magnitude. And they're like, no, they want this. I'm like, no, they don't. This is what they want.
And that's because of the financial background that you brought in.
A little bit of the financial background, but a little bit of I've worked at that level. And as soon as I could start to pull the context of the question, which hadn't been discussed at that point, like who asked it, what are they using it for, I realized they were literally looking for a bullet on a slide. But people here were thinking, well, no, they want a detailed analytical answer. And not because they're amazing peers. I learn a lot from them every day. But I think I can help them learn about what it means to be at that level and be putting a slide presentation together for a boss. And yes, I said slide presentation because, the government loves PowerPoint slides. But I knew as soon as we started to talk about that context, I'm like, oh, this is what they're doing. They're looking for this, and it's a bullet on a slide.
Wow.
And that's what it ended up being. And so I like that I can share that broader perspective of what's happening at that you know, above us level and what they're really trying to get at, as opposed to us maybe not having that perspective and then answering the wrong question.
Hmm.
Right. And so that's kind of how I like to lead.
Is that a leadership trait, and what would be like the title of it?
I think it's just perspective.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's perspective, whether you want to call that a leadership trait, but I think that,
I hope it's
it has to be a leadership trait, right? Like, you have to understand, what's going on around you to be able to effectively lead.
Yeah. You had mentioned slowing down and not jumping right in. That takes a level of intentionality that not necessarily everybody brings to leadership. And I think it's very important.
So I think that as I reflect back on making the transition into leadership, right, it really was kind of like a trust fall. Because as you started to do something, and, you know, I had a team of people, and they'd say, okay, well, I think we should do it like this, and, you know, you want to kind of build that trust and delegate. Even if I was screaming inside, oh, that's not how I would do it, I had to let it go. I had to, like, have that trust fall of, okay, yeah, great, let's do that. You got it? Like, what's your plan? You know, move out. Even if that's not how I would do it, or I even had concerns about whether or not that would accomplish the end state we needed. But that's how people learn. They have to be able to do it. And I think sometimes the supervisor, right, when they, or the leader, you're right, not only are you burdening yourself and taking away from your time of doing strategic things, you're not letting them figure out how to do the things that you know how to do. And so I think letting go was absolutely one of the biggest kind of traits I had to really work hard at and deliberately, you know, like shut it down, you let them do it. And, you know, it worked out.
It's so in line with what we teach our new supervisors in Propel Launch, which literally we say we're taking you from doer to orchestrator. Mm-hmm. It's transitioning. You got to let go of that subject matter expertise,
right,
and change the way that you approach your day to day. That's a tough transition from an identity perspective. Did you also experience that kind of identity shift? And how'd you get through that?
It is an identity shift a little bit, because you have to be confident in yourself as a leader, right? Part of that is your confidence comes from I'm able to do and complete, but then you're like a brand new supervisor, a brand new leader, so you haven't built that confidence. But I'll tell you, years in the Pentagon taught me, like, you just have to do it, right? There's no training wheels, just you need to learn how to lead and you need to do it from day one. Right, you've got to own it, and you've got to show up as that leader every day, even if maybe you're still trying to figure it out. And I think that mindset shift has got to happen with people to be able to navigate that kind of identity crisis. And then you also have to figure out how are you going to, I'll say, replace, right, the satisfaction you got from doing with leading, right? Because if it's just sitting at your desk all day, that's not going to do it, right? You've got to figure out what works for you to basically replace that same satisfaction value. Is it mentoring somebody more? You have more time for that. Is it helping develop strategic goals and strategic plans, right? A lot of supervisors, I think, sometimes don't realize they have to do those functions. And so figuring out how you get that same satisfaction, I think, is a big part of navigating that transition.
Yeah. You spent some time in the beginning of our conversation kind of helping us understand better what it is that your current role does. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the past career, and you've mentioned a couple times that you worked at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Like, most of the country probably has no idea what it's like to even walk in that building. So, like, I picture, like, oh, there I am walking down the hall, and there's the Secretary of the Navy.
Yes. All day.
Does that really happen?
Absolutely.
And it's just commonplace for you.
Yeah. It is. You know, I definitely felt like that, right? I mean, I was so fortunate. When I started working as a financial management trainee, I was assigned to the Pentagon. My first job was with the
That's like a FMNT. TV show, though, to a lot of people.
It is. And, you know, I think back to that first day. Like, I lived up in Silver Spring, Maryland. I drove down 16th Street. I parked, walked in, and, right, I mean, you know, like, I grew up in Syracuse, New York. My parents were teachers. You know, I went to a small liberal arts college in Virginia. And so walking into this ginormous office building was completely overwhelming, right? You had to have a codes that told you which floor, which ring, which, you know.
Good decoder.
Right. <for it. laughs> Right. But I'll tell you, I walked into an office environment where it was clear that everybody, it was a tight-knit group, and they were prepared to bring in new people and train them, not just on what it took to do the job, but the building, the etiquette, right? It was a really great time to start working for the Navy, and the way that team welcomed me and helped me with everything from what do you need to do in the job to here's a tip in meetings, this is how you should dress, this is etiquette in a meeting, right? Everything from when the admiral walks in, you stand up, you know, put your hand on your heart when this plays, when you're doing attention to orders, do this. Like, they walked me through all of that because I didn't have a clue. But yeah, it probably took me 4 or 5 months in the Pentagon before I really could get comfortable. Thankfully, I'm like good with directions, so I didn't get lost, which was definitely a challenge for a lot of the new people in the Pentagon. But then it kind of got to be, you know, less scary. I would also tell you though, I had never worked anywhere else. So I didn't have a basis of comparison, right? I mean, I did, like, retail cashiering jobs.
I was going to say, my first job was a bagger at Safeway store, yeah. Right?
So. I used to work at Ace Hardware. I cut keys and mix paint. Like, I could do that stuff, but I've never worked in an office.
Right.
And so it was a really interesting transition, but I didn't have a basis of comparison. So as I think about what shaped me, certainly that was a big part of what I saw good leaders do, was always being very accessible, and listening, right? No matter what, like as a brand new financial management intern, what I was doing during the budget review to write an issue paper was looked at the same way as my GS-15 counterpart. So it was really normalized from that standpoint, right? And I think that spoke a lot to bringing like kind of humility and like making sure everybody had an even playing field. That really resonated because, like I said, to be a, you know, 1 year in, and I'm writing my first issue paper, and they're like treating it the same way they do someone who's been doing this for 15 years, I think speaks volumes to how much they trust you, and they trust themselves to make sure you're trained enough to do a good job, that you can show up like that, right? But I think that really did shape a lot about how I try to make sure that we always are thinking about not just, you know, true succession planning, true workforce development, all the way from those who've been here 2 weeks to those who've been here 20 years. Normalizing that and making sure everybody has the same opportunities and is treated fairly, I think, is really important. And definitely something that I value and try to exhibit as part of, as being a leader. The other thing I would tell you that really shaped leadership was watching the transitional leadership. Meaning, right, pretty much in the Pentagon, if you work at the echelon, you're going to align to somebody who's a political appointee. And there was wild variation in the types of people that came in, right? Agnostic to party, this has nothing to do with anything like that, but just the types of people that came in. Some were amazing leaders. Like I said, to this day, I remember Secretary Dalton and his leadership cards. He was always out talking about leadership, right? I mean, that sticks with me. So when I think back to other things that influenced my leadership style, I think back a lot to 9/11, right? I mean, it's the 12th of September, 23 right now, years later, right here today as we're doing this. You know, there's a lot to unpack there, right? Both from my connection to mission being in the Pentagon and having the plane below us, and what I saw that day. But it was also an interesting and memorable experience on leadership. You know, we didn't really know a plane had hit the building, to be honest, right? You felt it, and I was on the side where the plane hit, right? Wow. We had just moved into the wedge right there behind the helipad, and we were certainly watching on TV what was happening. We knew what was happening, but when the building shook and you saw flames, you never in a million years dreamt a plane hit it. We were on the C-ring, so we were three rings in from there's five rings in the Pentagon. Think of a bullseye, A, B, C, D, and E. E is the external, okay, outer ring. I was in the C ring on the fourth floor. So we were pretty close, right? The plane, the nose of the plane was theoretically underneath us.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, wow. So when we started to go down the stairwell, and in those days in the Pentagon, Once you got on a stairwell, the only way out of the stairwell was the first floor. That didn't work because it was on fire. And so as the smoke started to come up, we were all stuck in the stairwell. And fortunately, someone opened the door back up so we could get back out. So there's a lesson in how you design buildings. Don't make it one floor escape. But as all that was happening, right, and you're talking like minutes, right, I watched our military. We were predominantly civilian, but would have, you know, two or three military. They just owned it, right? They got everybody out. Like, they were like, yep, you here, we're doing this, clear the space. Like, you just watched leadership all day, every day. So, 2 weeks later, I'll tell you what's the opposite of that experience, was 2 weeks later, our political appointee came in. We had been, obviously, you know, out for a couple days. We got to go back into the Pentagon and gather our belongings. It was structurally safe on the fourth floor to go in. But we were moved to Crystal City. NAVC, ironically, had just moved out of Crystal City, and no one was in those office spaces. And so we went into Crystal City in very kind of, I'm not going to say rundown spaces, right? But like old wooden desks, like carpet that clearly was about to be ripped out, but they stopped, right? And so it was probably 2 weeks after 9/11, and like we're kind of all in there. It's still really hard. The country's just, you know, pulling together, and we were trying to figure out how much money we needed in the supplemental, and we were just doing a lot of different things. But we were all just kind of hunkered around these old wooden desks, just figuring out what to do, and our leadership was right there with us. So we had somebody come who was one of our political appointees come to tour the spaces. And he walked in. He looked around at everybody, didn't say a word, and walked back out. And immediately all of us were like, I no longer have respect for that leader. It was one of those moments where you're like, when I have the opportunity to lead in a crisis, that's not how I'm going to show up, right? And I thought back to those military folks who just were tremendous, and I'm watching this person not have the skill set to be able to deal with that, right? And I think that's one of the important things is we train people and we talk to people and we think about wartime readiness. We have to be able to make sure that we know how to lead in that situation, right? Whether you were here at the Navy Yard after the shooting, right? We'll have that anniversary walk next week. Right, there's things you have to do as a leader when you're in those situations. And I'll tell you, walking into a room and not saying a thing and walking out is not one of them. And so I share that because that was hugely, obviously that whole event was hugely, you know, important in my career, right? I was 5 years in, right? And I was like, oof, this shouldn't happen again. I'm staying with this for life. But more importantly, I saw what good leadership was and I saw what bad leadership was. And I think that's really important, and that we teach people how to be good leaders in those really hard situations, because we're going to be faced with those situations again. I mean, God willing, not here, but, you know, there's a lot of things happening. We got to be prepared. And being prepared to be a leader in a situation like that is absolutely something we got to be serious and start talking about.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing. Obviously, yeah. Very personal story, yeah. Very impactful. And I'm glad you started talking about what we need to think like, because yeah. The truth of the matter is we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And right. And when you called out the leadership of the military folks, that's awesome. I'm glad that was there.
Yeah.
We have a lot of civilian leaders. What could you tell them about that kind of same approach to leadership in a crisis where you felt cared for, you felt there was decisiveness happening? I mean, can we capture that? How do we capture that?
Yeah, I think we do capture that. I mean, can we improve? Absolutely. First of all, I think you got to talk about it, right? We talk a lot about talent management. Talent management in the DoD has to include emergency preparedness, right? It has to include that more specifically. I think we have to think about how we get the muscle memory on what to do, right?
So we have to practice like we're going to fight.
We have to practice it like we're in those scenarios, right? Don't always assume that you have everything happening the way it does right this moment, right? And so I think it's a lot about talking about it and getting some practice and figuring out what does practice even look like. And certainly sharing those stories is just as, you know, just as important about, you know, hey, this is how this happened here, you know, whether it's 9/11, whether it was stuff here, but just being real and listening to people who've been through those experiences and making sure people hear those stories. And yeah, I mean, again, I'm with you. I don't ever want to have to go through that again, but I also want to make sure that we're preparing our future leaders to be able to navigate that. And I think we have opportunities to show up on that stuff every day, right? There was a situation here at the Navy Yard where there wasn't an issue inside the Navy Yard, but one pretty close by.
Not so long ago.
And it was hard to know what to do. You know, it was early, you know, always like kind of the worst time, right? Early in the morning, no one knows really what's happening. You've got police departments involved, not DOD police, but Metropolitan Police. And you're trying to figure out what's happening. And, you know, thinking about that whole of government approach, I think is something that we have to be a little bit more deliberate on, particularly in emergency response situations where you're going to have to rely not just on DOD, right? This isn't just the, you know, I'm sure many of you listening may be at an installation in the middle of, you know, if you're in Crane, Indiana, right? But if you're in a metropolitan area where the people to your right and left aren't DOD and something happens, how do you respond to that? We have to start really thinking and capturing what that looks like. You know, doing a fire drill just for your building is interesting, but I'm 20 feet from that building next to us. So I got to make sure that if we're doing a fire drill, we know how that building's going to react and how that building's going to react. Yeah, and think about things not just for our own little niche, but more broadly than that.
Right, so it's not the 100 people at the one wing of the Pentagon, it's the entire Pentagon, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and you go back to the Pentagon, there's people that day who were in the building had no idea it even happened because it was such a big building.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whew. So the wonderful takeaway from our conversation, and we've talked a few times, I got to see who Jamie is today in a way that I hadn't. So thank you for being willing to kind of let down the total professional, not that you're not professional in this conversation, but that side of you, and just let us see a little bit of who you are. I think that that's going to really resonate with people. And it feels a little risky. The truth is that if our folks all throughout our general audience, which is our Naval Sea Systems folks, mm-hmm. but also everyone else can see that here you are in a role that's got a lot going on and impactful, and you're a really awesome human being too, right? That's important for us to see. So thank you for being willing to share that part of yourself.
Well, thanks for having me. I think I've said this before to people. It's not Men in Black. Like, you don't get told you're a leader and you get that divisive thing that they had, right? Right? Like, you get up the same way. I'm dealing with, you know, sick kids and, you know, my husband broke his leg this summer, right? And I'm really glad you asked, because one of the things that I try to do is always make sure people understand that, right? I have the same pressures that you do. There's no magic formula that you get the minute you get put into a supervisor or a leadership position. And the more we can talk and share and recognize that at the end of the day, yeah, maybe someone's in a different position, you know, is a rank order file higher up on the food chain. But at the end of the day, we're all people who have to work together. That to me is how we're going to get things done and how we're going to keep being the best Navy we can be.
Thank you for joining this episode of the Fuel Podcast, brought to you by NAVSEA's Propel Leadership Development Program. For more information about Propel, visit the Propel Wiki page. Thanks for adding fuel to propel your journey.